Verse 13. For the promise that he should be the heir of the world was not to Abraham or to his seed through the law, but through the righteousness of faith. For if they which are of the law be heirs, then faith is made void, and the promise made of none effect. Because the law worketh wrath. For where no law is, there is no transgression. Therefore, it is of faith that it might be by grace, to the end the promise might be sure to all of the seed, not to that only which is of the law, but to that also which is of the faith of Abraham, who is the father of us all. Now, there's a jillion stuff more written about Abraham, but the idea that Abraham is the father of us, he's the father of faith, is hard to imagine. In Galatians 8, it says that Abraham, well, let's go there, go to Galatians 3. I said Galatians 8, didn't I?
What?
Galatians 3. Does everybody know when Abraham lived? 2,000 years before Christ. Chapter 3, verse 6. Even as Abraham believed God, and it was accounted to him for righteousness. Know you therefore that they which are of faith, the same are the children of Abraham. Again, he's the father in Romans, we are his children in Galatians. And the scripture, foreseeing that God would justify the heathen through faith, preached before the gospel unto Abraham, saying, in thee all nations shall all nations be blessed. So then they which be of faith are blessed with faithful Abraham. Now the idea that the scriptures declare that the gospel was preached to Abraham is really troubling to some. So that's on their ignore list. So a whole lot of scriptures on the ignore list. It seems to me then if we have studied this a long time ago in, I think we studied in Bananas, but the seven, what happened? There were seven consecrations of Abraham, or seven specific events that delineated a new life in each of those seven levels. And that's analogous to the seven lees that wine is made from in the ancient way. It was poured off into lees seven different times, and it was done so that, first of all, this jobby would come across the top of the wine, and it would get off all the waste that had bubbled up, and then it would be poured into another vessel, and it would be poured so that it would leave the bottom part, so that the stuff that came to the surface was thrown off, and the stuff that was left at the bottom stayed in the old wineskin. You got it? So the seven consecrations are analogous to that seven thing, and the thing that has happened to Abraham has to happen to us. The first thing that happened to Abraham, anybody remember? After his call.
Is this when he came out of the cave?
No.
When he saw the bolt?
No.
When he
first thing that happened to Abraham once he saw is he had to leave his land. He had to leave the land of his fathers. And he had to leave all the gods of his fathers behind. In fact, he was instrumental in destroying the gods of his father.
Because that's when Taurus took over.
Huh?
Is that when Taurus became nope. the constellation?
Yeah, he was at the cusp, remember, between Capricorn and Taurus. And when he saw that Taurus was the new, then he destroyed them all. So the first thing he did is he left his land and he went to Haran. Okay, got that? But before he left the land, he had to destroy the idols.
Before he destroyed the idols, he saw that the gods of the world changed, and he said if they changed or not.
That's right. That's what Mike just said.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Second thing that happened, he had to leave his family. Understand that? He left the land physically, and he left his family, except those that were of faith. And he didn't leave him to destruction. He didn't hate him or anything. But he had to leave his family that he might be joined to a new family of faith. Didn't say he didn't love him, he didn't do anything, but he left his family. That's the second consecration of Abraham. The third consecration was he followed only God. Now, how did he do that? How do you follow God? A little antenna here that says,
"You can't follow anybody."
Little antenna here says,
"Go without knowing,
not biting."
Nah.
What? You don't have a little antenna?
No, I mean, I thought in his case it was one of those deals where he did something, didn't like it, did something.
That's exactly it. The way he followed God was he was just true to himself. He did something for a while. He went someplace for a while. And he said, I won't do that anymore. Now, can you hear me? That's how Abraham followed God.
It's pretty damn spiritual.
Yeah, it kind of takes the religion out of religion. I don't want to do that anymore. I'm leaving this place. I'm not going to take, I'm 46 years old, I have to take this anymore.
He really did.
Remember that there are three, for those of you who may not know this, all of you know it, but you all forget it. The Bible uses the phrase, the faith of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Jacob, 165 times.
Did you count them all?
Yes. What does that mean? It's great news if you can hear it. The faith of Abraham is the faith, the ancient rabbis used to call it the faith of learning, but it's really the faith of unlearning. The faith of Abraham is, I don't want to do that anymore. I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm sick of that stuff. I'm not going to do it.
It's not under this rock.
The faith, right. I'm not going to do that anymore. Now, that's all. That's all he ever did. He messed up constantly. He sold his wife.
Twice,
that's right.
At the slightest hint of a famine, he left the promise and went to Egypt. I mean, he messed up all the time. He just didn't, I'm not going to do that anymore. All he was honest. Faith of Jacob. The faith of Jacob at a very young age. Jacob had to, who was in his 30s, Jacob had to wrestle. Everything was difficult. Everything was a fight. The faith of Isaac is the thing that everybody thinks they want. Instant revelation. But it came with a knife in his throat. Cost him everything. Remember the Talmud says, as they were walking up to Mount Moriah, Samael, the chief of demons, appeared first unto Isaac and said, you're a crazy old man. He's lost it. God told him that he's supposed to offer you up as a sacrifice.
You know that wood you're carrying?
You know that wood you're carrying? And he appeared unto Isaac as a young man, according to the Talmud. Well, how did he appear as a young man? He appeared as Isaac in his mind. Mind talk says, wait a minute, this old man's crazy. He's lost it. This, something's wrong with this picture. It doesn't feel right.
He told me that I was the child of the promise.
I'm the child of the promise. I'm heir of all things, and now the quarter is going to kill me.
I feel weird.
My stomach is upset. Right. You got the picture of how the Samael, the chief of demons, but can you grok that? That's what your mind is always telling you, that faith can't work. You can't go without knowing. And the chief of demons is talking to each one of you. Okay, then the chief.
Somebody said the other night, maybe it was you, somebody said the other night, one of the times that Martin Luther saw the devil was in the middle of the night. He sat up and he looked and he said, oh, it's only you. And he was looking at the mirror in his room.
Right. Then Samael appeared unto Abraham. He was an old man. This isn't the Talmud. I didn't make this up, I promise you. Sounds like something I'd make up, though.
I make up everything.
In order to get my money.
Yeah, that's right.
In order to create this great organization. Got these great elders. He appeared unto Abraham as an old man. And Samael said to Abraham, you must have heard wrong.
He appeared to who?
Abraham. He appeared to Abraham as an old man, saying, this couldn't be right. You heard the wrong message. This can't be right. How? This is the child of the promise that you're offering up. Can't be. But both Isaac overcame Samael by talking to Abraham, telling him exactly what he was feeling. Abraham overcame Samael because he had 100 years of experience in hearing only the voice of God. He will not hear another voice. Understand that? So the three faiths, the faith of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. One's, I don't want to do that anymore. The other's a fight. The other is instant revelation. All three of them lead to becoming Israel, or Israel, she who sees God. You can't see God and live. So all of them come to the cross. Now, what's frustrating to me is that every one of those graces is resident in each one of you. But for each one of you, one of the graces is dominant. You know, what's frustrating to me is I want everybody to see like I see. Sort of like, you know, then it would be really boring. Can you imagine a whole room full of holies? It would be really, really boring. So anyway, so now we got, he follows only God. The fourth consecration is, he separated from Lot. Now Lot always represents your possessions. He gave Lot the green, verdant valley, the beautiful part of the Jordan River. He took the barren highlands. What happened? Well, that which was the verdant valley, the beautiful green valley, became the Dead Sea. Because Lot, in his possessions and trying to keep them, stopped prophesying, stopped letting out. And he became dammed up. He became as low as the lowest spot on earth. And he then... The lesson of Sodom and Gomorrah is that they tried to retain their possessions. You know, we hear that the sin of Sodom and the sin of Gomorrah is sodomy. Well, that was true. But the real reason the Talmud says that it was destroyed is that they did not entertain strangers and they did not take care of their orphans and homeless, because they were more concerned with their possessions. So the separation from the fourth consecration is the separation from Lot, or separation from your possessions. Now for some of you, that's really difficult. The fifth separation was he had to give up plans for Ishmael. Remember, Ishmael was Abraham's legitimate son. He was good. And what does Ishmael represent? Your plans for you. Okay, plans for you? Well, if you want to follow the path of the way, then you have to give up the plans for you. You have to give up what you think is the image of what it's going to be. The sixth consecration of Abraham was not only did you have to give up the plans, but you had to cast out the bondwoman and her son. This bondwoman, remember, anybody remember her name?
Hagar.
You know who Hagar was?
Pharaoh's daughter.
Hagar was Pharaoh's daughter. And this Bible calls her the bondwoman. So you have to cast out the bondwoman and her son. What does that mean? What's the bondwoman? Who's the bondwoman? We've only studied this 300 times. Who's, huh? Bondwoman, the bondwoman is cause and effect. Yeah, the belief system that if you do this, this is going to happen. And the bondwoman is then the whore of Babylon.
Little boy.
Her little boy, her wounded child, her little wounded child. We have to cast out the wounded little. Everybody understand that? And the final consecration of Abraham. The final, the seventh consecration. When he became the friend of God. Is when he offered up Isaac. When he offered up the very promise of God. All of the God stuff. So that the offering up of Isaac, the final consecration of Abraham, is the emptying of self. The abandonment of self, the mind of Christ, the continuing with him in his temptation, the blessed are the poor in spirit. Anybody see that a little bit?
What made him stop Abraham from cutting his throat?
God. Jesus, actually. Jesus, but not Jesus Christ. Excuse me, Christ, but not Jesus Christ. He wasn't yet in the form of man. He appeared as the angel of God. And as the knife was up and ready to be plunged or slit, he said, stop.
Look at that bush.
Look at the bush. There was a ram, and there's the ram for the sacrifice. Now,
when you were describing them walking up the mountain and how Samael came to Isaac, I was reminded of you and I riding in the car yesterday. I'm sitting there having this conversation. I thought with myself, but I can see that it's...
Samael, baby, glad to see you.
The same being.
Same being.
The very same being doing the very same thing.
But it was a sincere conversation.
I thought so.
Wait a minute. For the rest of the class, you were having a sincere conversation with yourself.
With myself, I thought.
And Ole was in the car.
Yes.
And
which means
it.
I was, of course, part of it.
That's why he doesn't, that's why these guys don't like me.
I don't want to drive with Harry.
I was driving up the mountain with Abraham.
Remember Christ said, if I had not come and spoken unto, this is a people that knew that everything about them was sin and trespass. They made thousands of sin offerings and trespass offerings daily. But Christ said this incredible thing in John 15, 22. You know, if you want to go and check it out, see if I made it up.
I just thought I'd follow along.
John 15, verse 22. Jesus said, if I had not come and spoken unto them, they had not had sin, but now they have no cloak for their sin. Is that reasonably close?
There's a little R next to the word hath. You didn't articulate that, but other than that, it's perfect.
Finger stick.
If I had not come and spoken unto them, they had not had sin, but now they have no cloak for their sin. So what did he mean? Christ redefines sin. And what sin now is self.
Well, it was the thought of something that you had done when they were making all these sin offerings.
Some of them did. People that saw Christ in the offering saw it. And because they saw, they were blameless.
That's why Abraham was able to walk around.
That's why he saw the gospel. Remember, the gospel was preached unto Abraham. What Jesus revealed was each man's inherent desire or will for power and control. Absolute control. If we are honest, we'll admit with ourselves that our desire is for this control. We try to make all kinds of little statements. No, I don't want to control anything. Some of us don't want to control like the universe, but we want to control at least our own lives and our surroundings. What?
Except that some of us do.
Some of us do. The Queen of Heaven has spoken. It is the age-old problem of wanting to be God. Now, who is Lord in your life? Have you made Jesus Christ Lord of your life? Well, if you have made him Lord of your life, then you are God. You understand? It's like going to the church of your choice and expect to be moved by God. It's a contradiction in terms. You understand that? I'm going to the church of my choice.
But God told me to go there.
I'm choosing to go to my choice. If I chose it and I expect to be moved by God, I can't be. You really want to know God? You really want to believe? You really want to trust? Or do you want to keep control? Think about it. Analyze this. No man wanting to go to war doesn't take stock to see if he has enough to win. No man wanting to go to build a tower does so without taking inventory and seeing if this is what he wants. Do you want God? Do you want to trust? Do you want faith? Do you really want God to be Lord of your life? Think about it. Think of the exceptions. One of the great lines that has ever been written in the history of the world is in Confessions of St. Augustine. He'd been a believer for 12 years, and he wrote in his little journal, said, "Lord, make me chaste, but not just yet."
I have a date setting. Make me chase something.
I mean, do you understand what it means to present yourself this living sacrifice? Do you understand that any of you, not one of you, chose to be in this place? Most people's relationship with God is based on some practical necessity. We need him. We come to him when times when we're confused or times are rough. But then once the crisis is over, then you return to you being your own God. So what then has to happen is then God puts some other obstacle in your way. And then, climb back up. And he's put 1,000 obstacles in your path, hoping that you would stop and rest. And yet each time you obstinately and determinedly climb over it by force of will, you think it's heroic. It's not heroic, it's stupid. Now, there are ever and always only two options spiritually. There's never any other place. It's either abandon yourself the second or crucify him. Can you see that? There's no other position. There's no neutral position. It's either abandon yourself, and we just talked about how you know, it's expected. You're not supposed to get this overnight. we've talked about the faith of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. We talked about these consecrations. But to know that ever and always, the only way that process happens is to see that ever and always your only choice is to abandon yourself or crucify him afresh. There's no other position possible. Does anybody understand a little bit?
I don't understand about the crucifying him afresh. Is that like if I determine that if something happens and instead of just standing, that I decide that, okay, I have to do this to make it right or wrong or happen? Or
every single time that you take control, which you do by mind talk, then you're saying that the resurrection hasn't happened yet. So you're crucifying the Son of God afresh.
This has to be a big deal for me because I'm just not seeing it at all.
Anybody help her?
Christ is resurrected. So if you move into the position of I'm alive, I'm me, I'm real, I'm doing this, I have to do that. Christ is not resurrected. I mean, there's only one way to get him there. There's only one way to get him back down. You got to kill him. I mean, the truth of the matter is, he is resurrected. He is your life. There's only one way to make that not true. You got to kill him.
I think back to Caiaphas, who was saying that, you know, if we either have to kill, we have to kill this.
Or the nation will be destroyed.
Or our whole reason for being, our whole direction that we're going, what we're doing, is will be killed. So
right.
Let's kill.
I'll save this and kill this.
All right.
Is.
Now, see yourself standing there on Golgotha, because you are. It's a place of the skull. You're 2,000 years ago. Pilate is there. And every single person, either by their silence or their active acquiescence, yelled, "Crucify him." Can you understand that? People who he had healed, people who he had raised from the dead, people who had been his disciples, people who had walked with him, his family members. Every single person on the face of the earth yelled, either by their silence or by their active voice, "Crucify him." Do you think you'd be any different? Crucify him. Kill him.
There's no record of anybody being arrested for trying to protect him, is there?
You know, it seems like the best that one could hope for would be to be the thief that was on the cross next to him and said, "I believe."
Right.
That's the only other being in the play.
I've seen that before.
I've seen that before in Oklahoma. At Passover.
So you just got to be nailed there with no place to go, and then it's, am I going to curse God or am I going to give up?
Yeah, and the two options of nailing are, you this fool, or I believe.
It's like the list of Montauk's to acquiesce just as much as.
Well, it is. You're crucifying him, crucify him, crucify him, crucify him. Let's be done with him. Let's grind him to the dust.
Remove this troublesome.
Let's remove this troublesome thing, being this worm, from our life.
Molly, it's a little hard to accept the Messiah if you're geared, your whole life is built around anticipating the Messiah.
Can you see that any worry, any concern whatsoever is simply the pressure of self-deity? That's why entering the rest is so easy. If you're no longer concerned with self-deity or self-deification. It isn't complicated, guys.
It really makes those words, "It is finished," very powerful.
Right. Everybody hear that? Everybody understand perfectly?
It reminds me of the Melito speech where he says, now if Christ be crucified, let it not be by my hand.
Yeah. He must be crucified, but let it not be here. Let it not be by my hand. If he must needs die, let it be by a stranger's hand. That's enough. I don't feel like talking anymore. Anybody anything to say?
Yeah.
Right,
well, I'm glad, because I've wondered about that before, but
crucifying the Son of God afresh. I need to, we need to go on to our place. I'm sorry. Go to Hebrews 8. Hebrews 10, verse 23. Let us hold fast the profession of our faith without wavering, for he is faithful that promised. And let us consider one another to provoke unto love and to good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. For if we sin willfully after that we have received the knowledge of the truth, there remaineth no more sacrifice for sins, but a certain fearful looking for of judgment and fiery indignation, which shall devour the adversaries. He that despised Moses' law died without mercy under two or three witnesses. Of how much sore punishment, suppose ye, shall he be thought worthy who hath trodden under foot the Son of God, and hath counted the blood of the covenant wherewith he was sanctified an unholy thing, and hath done despite unto the Spirit of grace? Now you see, that sounds scary, right? But I know that I have done that. I know that he has paid the price. I know then that I am free now. Looking unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of faith.
Not faith in, but faith of.
Why is sins plural then?
Trespasses.
There's no more sacrifice for sins instead of for sin.
It's because it's talking of the trespass offering. Trespasses.
No, I'm really just about Abraham, offering up the promise, coming to the point of saying, even if I don't, even if I won't be with you, even if, all this is for nothing and you throw me from the depths of hell, that's still okay.
No.
I mean, that's, I've heard those words, but it's never like.
Yeah. There's a couple times since we've been an organization where it overwhelmed me that I knew that I was going to hell.
Well, that's why it's, sitting here feeling like, I've devoted my life here. And even if devoting my life here doesn't get me near God, that's okay. I've still got to do what I'm doing.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to say. That I had to go through this whole machinations of things in my mind the first time, and it was, well, I could, go out and make some money and get drunk and have girlfriends and all that, and then, Jack parlance, I played that frequency, been there, done that.
Yeah, we can do it.
And so I went through the list of all the possible options, been there, done that, been there, done that, been there, done that, been there, done that. It was futile. And so even if I was certain that I was going to hell, that I was irredeemable, I mean this with everything in me. I do exactly what I'm doing. And that's the position that's neat.
Yeah.